that, we've got company.
Hello.
Trust me, Hera, I'm excited. This is my excited face.
No, oh, this makes me so happy.
I like you. You don't fit in around here either.
All right, if I tag along?
More the merrier.
Get ready to be impressed.
You ready to be impressed, Tam?
I'm completely ready.
Bright suns, everyone. You're listening to The Geeky Bubble. I am your host, Jonah, and with me is the irritated crosshair to my ever-hopeful Omega, my mom, Maria.
Hello. Today, we're going to discuss the Season 3 premiere episodes of The Bad Batch, Confined, Path Unknown, and Shadows of Tantus.
Yes. So, yay for Season 3. Woo-hoo! Although we didn't have to wait too long like everyone else.
No.
So I just wanted to briefly talk about how I had the opportunity to watch these episodes at Lucasfilm earlier this week. And I can't thank Lucasfilm Publicity enough for sending an invitation and allowing me to take part in the last season premiere screening of Star Wars The Bad Batch. It's always amazing getting to see the episodes on the big screen and being surrounded by other fans, because that's always a lot of fun. And I loved every moment of it. There was also a Q&A with Michelle Ang, Dee Bradley Baker, Jennifer Corbett, and Brad Rao. And I was dumb and forgot to record it. I mean, we couldn't record video, but I know in the past people have recorded audio, and I'm out of practice. It's been a while since I've done any of that, so I apologize. But it was amazing. and I hope there'll be another opportunity down the line, especially as the series comes to an end. So we will see. And hopefully I will remember to hit record.
Tix, tix.
I know. I'm sorry.
You did a mom.
I did.
You did a mommy. You're getting old.
I am. I think you're referring to when I did the Q&A with Dave.
Yes.
And I'm like, did you take photos? And my mom's like, photos? What? Yeah. I was like, I was up there with Dave and you didn't take photos.
I was too entranced in the conversation. Yeah, in the moment.
You really get pulled into it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you forget those little things here and there.
See, it's the circle of life.
It is, yeah.
It always comes to pass.
Yes, it's true. Oh, and I also got to sign the Funko Pop I gave Dave, the one that I made up.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, so it didn't cross my mind when I first made it to put my name on it. And so a few months back on Twitter, Lillian Noble, she posted a photo of it. And she's like, who did this? Who did this Dave Filoni Funko Pop? And I forget how I got wind of it, or maybe I saw the tweet and reacted to it then, but I said, it was me, I did that. And she's like, oh man, the next time you're here, you need to sign it, you know, put your name on it. And so I ended up doing that. It was still screwed to the wall though, so like I had to do like this upside down sort of trying to sign my name. And I made sure to put 2018 because that's when the event happened. So yay, so I'm glad I got to do that. And so going into the episodes, I love this little very tiny detail, which was the droplets of water.
Yes.
That were dripping out of the faucet. And
every morning it would start like that.
Yeah. It was a constant dripping water from the sink. And I like how it was almost like seconds ticking by in a clock.
Like a reminder of the monotony of the day. It's going to happen, the same thing over and over.
Yeah, basically. And I like how the centrifuge was counting down sort of like the minutes or the hours, and then her tick marks on the window were counting the days and the months. It was a brilliant way to capture, in all these little subtle ways, to capture the passage of time.
Mm-hmm.
And just to demonstrate the repetitive nature of her day, which would have driven me crazy.
I would have been done by the third day.
I know.
like, nope,
this isn't for me. No,
take me right now. Do whatever you're gonna do, but nope.
I was going to ask you, are you the kind of person who gets irritated by those repetitive sounds? You know, like when it's very quiet, all of a sudden you hear the dripping sound from the faucet.
Yeah.
It gets to you.
Yeah. The only sound I can tolerate is rhythmic. It has to be rhythmic. Like, there has to be music behind it.
Oh, okay.
Or it has to be nature. Like, I sleep every night with a waterfall.
Yeah.
So that is the same. The waterfall just runs and runs for like an hour and 10 minutes. That doesn't bother me. It's different kind of noise than the repetitive nature of one echo, like boom, boom.
Yeah.
Boom.
It gets to you. Yeah. It drives you insane for some people. You know, and speaking of the blood machine thingy, the centrifuge, as StarWars.com was calling it, it has a top compartment where there's a vial of blood. That blood has a sample of midichlorians in it, or the M count, as they keep referring to it. So it drops the blood into the other vials to see if it causes a reaction. But I wonder if the blood in the top compartment is the Emperor's blood or the blood of another Force-sensitive person.
That would be interesting to know.
So that I would love to find out whose blood it is that they're experimenting with. Because obviously, this is ultimately all for Palpatine. So is Palpatine like sitting on a bed and offering up his blood for samples?
I would think that it could be any Force sensitive, because what they're trying to get at is the midichlorian count, M count.
Yeah, so when they transfer it.
Yeah, so regardless whether it's Palpatine or another
Force
sensitive person, it will be what they need. So I will guess that whatever specimens, whoever they're going to be testing this stuff in, they're already drawing blood from them.
Yeah. So I was curious whether it was just Palpatine offering up a pint of blood or if it's other Force-sensitive person with a high midichlorian count that they're looking to replicate, you know, because they talked about the transfer of midichlorians and how depending on the blood that they used, there was a sort of degradation of the M count after the transfer. So they're looking for a blood sample where that doesn't happen.
Yeah, because the end result is to clone.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So Nala Se tells Omega that the, quote, Empire seeks the reproduction of a genetic M count, but the experiments on the specimens have yet to yield the desired result. And Omega replies, "What specimens? You mean the clones?" And Nala Se says, "No, not the clones." So my brain is like, okay, well, then who are these specimens? Are they early versions of Palpatine? Are they early versions of Snoke from the sequels? Or like how we just talked about, are they Force-sensitive people who are also being subjected to experiments
like the clones?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm curious who they might have back there.
Yeah.
Like, because we know that a lot of the Jedi died during the Purge, but who did they capture?
Sure. Alive and they're using.
Yeah. My immediate thought at one point was, oh man, what if they're using Luminara Unduli? But then we know that she gets executed in that one episode of Rebels. But yeah, I have no idea. I'm curious. I want to know. So then when Nala Se and Hemlock exit the vault, because they go in there to check on a few things and then they come back out, she tells him, the Emperor should be pleased we accomplished a successful transfer. And then he replies, not when the M count was severely diminished in the process. If we do not match or exceed the specimen's original count, it is a failure. So it's definitely a Force-sensitive being or several Force-sensitive beings that they're dealing with.
Yes. And that's why the sample that they're using not necessarily has to be the Emperor.
Oh,
it can be anything, because he says that they're seeking to match the specific specimens count.
Yes, yeah.
So it depends who the specimen is, what the count needs to be.
Yeah, yeah. So let's just do a really like basic weird example. Let's say my midichlorian count is 2300. I don't even know whether that's a thing. But then, you know, I take your blood. Let's say you're not force sensitive. I take your blood and I try to mix my blood in with your blood to see if you can sustain the 2300 count that I have. But it actually drops down to 1,000.
Yeah, so that's not so successful.
And actually, you wouldn't even be able to sustain it. No. So it'll just keep degrading because your blood isn't going to be able to withstand
the
midichlorian count.
The whole experiment they're
doing. Yeah, and that's what they're trying to do, essentially. That was a very crude example.
I don't think we should ever go into the medical.
Heck no.
Into the medical field.
Heck no. And I'm sure there are some medical experts out there who are watching this and going, what? What is going on in Star Wars right now? I don't understand their science. What is the science they're trying to do? It's Star Wars science. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So let's talk about little Batcher. She was adorable. And I love how she's the best girl in the whole wide universe.
I just love how Omega always looks to a bigger picture when planning things. It's never the moment. It's never the now. It's never immediately. She builds up to things. Okay, you know what? I don't know exactly how, but let me befriend one of these animals. Let me make sure I have one of these in on my side, you know?
Right.
And she takes her time. And it amazes me that she always go for the kind of empathetic relationship, you know, with others. Like she's trying to get through to Emerit, but doesn't seem that it's working with that one. But she continues. She goes for it. I don't care if it fails or not, if it works or not, I'm gonna keep doing it.
I like that she's like Ezra in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ezra has this ability to befriend people he comes across.
Yeah.
I mean, you even see it in the Ahsoka series with the Noti. He became immediate friends with these people. He became friends with Hondo. He became friends with the Iron Squadron. And, you know, he befriends people, and he does it in a way where they could potentially come back because of that friendship they formed. And Omega's the same way. So her empathy helps her build these relationships that could be of some benefit to her.
That could potentially, yeah.
Yeah. And not in a selfish way, of course. It's just because of the kind of generous person she is, you want to be willing to help her.
Look, in the end, if we think about it, nobody wants to be alone. Nobody wants to do things on their own. So you always want to have that either special person or special friend that is there that you can count on. You don't have to be present 24/7, but in the moment that you need it, it's going to be there. And those are the relationships you like to cultivate, and you like to make sure that they're always there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what Omega does. She cultivates relationships.
Yes, yeah.
That may not always be there around, but at the moment she most needs them, they're going to be there.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I have no doubt those boys from the Ipsian mine are going to show up at some point.
Yeah.
And if they don't show up here in the third season, I'm sure they'll show up down the line in some story that we haven't come up with yet. So yeah, I really like those kinds of connections that Star Wars just does very well with these young characters. And during the part when Omega sets Batcher free, don't you just hate how Hemlock tries to, like, gaslight her? Like, trying to make her question her judgment and what she did. And I love how Omega just stands her ground. And especially when she said that Batcher deserves a chance.
Yeah, she should have the choice, not Hemlock.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily about whether she's going to die or not, whether her death is going to be tragic or not. It's about the fact that she has the choice. She's not told what to do or told when to die, or you know what
yes,
I'm saying?
It's yeah, yeah.
Like it's her choice.
Her fate is in her own hands.
And
yeah.
And Hemlock tries to twist it so that she feels bad about it, but she says, No.
I gave her freedom.
I gave her a choice.
Yeah.
Like, and that's all that matters.
If she dies, then at least she died free.
Free.
Yeah. And did you notice how Emery had like a minor reaction to that when she said she deserves a chance? The camera, quote unquote, like the focus turns to Emery. And she has like a minor reaction to that. Like the wheels are sort of turning in her head. And I wonder if Emery will come to a point when it's her turn to let Omega go, sort of like how Omega had to let Batcher go to give her a chance to survive. And I really want that to be the case at some point later on.
Yeah. She's going to have to choose.
For sure.
She's going to have to come to that. You see, the thing is, up until now, I think Emery thinks that while she's not told everything and she's not really treated exactly like an equal, she does have somehow some power over her own choices.
Mm-hmm.
But as the show continues, she's going to start to realize, I have no power. I have no choice. I'm not here because I like it, because I've been given an opportunity, because Dr. Hemlock saw potential in me. I'm here because I'm just one more.
Right. Another piece of another cog in
the machine.
Yeah. Yeah. Emery is by far one of the most interesting characters.
Intriguing. Yeah. Intriguing characters. Because you don't know exactly where she is, what she's thinking, what she's doing. All you can do is extrapolate from her
little moments here and there. Yeah. And in that same scene with Batcher escaping, Hemlock said, I did have plans for CT-9904 despite his resistance to re-education. And my mind was like, what plans? What plans are you planning, sir?
Yeah.
Because if re-education is not on the table because he's been resistant to it, and obviously he's not a viable choice for whatever experimentings they're doing for Palpatine, what other plans do you have? And I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
I need to know more. Like, they drop these little things in there and my mind just like halts.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait, say that again? And, you know, going back to Emery, according to her, she had been sent elsewhere as a child until Dr. Hemlock took her under his wing. Apparently, he saw potential in her. And Emery compares herself and Hemlock to Omega and Nala Se. But they're obviously two very different relationships, because I don't think Hemlock would hesitate to eliminate Emery. Whereas Nala Se is doing everything she can to protect Omega. And I was wondering whether you agree with that, or do you think that Emery is sort of a weak spot for Hemlock and we just haven't seen it yet?
No.
Oh. No.
I don't think the only weak spot that Hemlock has is his own greed.
It's himself.
It's himself. He's willing to go to this extraordinary ends to get what he wants. And that sometimes, if not all the time, ends up being the Achilles heel of everybody, whether a hero or a villain. It's always that one thing that makes them tick. And for Hemlock, it's power. And he will do whatever he has to. So I don't think Emery is his Achilles heel. I do think Hemlock is
her
Achilles heel. Whatever she does because she thinks he
reciprocates.
That he sees potential in her, that he was the one giving her the opportunity to grow and develop. And that's gonna be interesting. That moment where she has to choose between it's my hero,
right,
quote unquote, my hero or my destruction. Mm. Like, what is he?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And ultimately, if she does view Hemlock that way, how is that going to affect whatever she's now feeling towards Omega? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
because she's definitely seeking connection in her own way, because she's been brought up in a certain manner different than what they do with the clones. They are bred and trained to be soldiers. She obviously has been trained and bred to be something different. And she's been trying to connect emotionally without knowing she's trying to connect emotionally with Omega.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Is it going to be successful? Is it really happening?
Yeah.
How is that going to affect her relationship or what she thinks is the relationship she has with Dr. Hemlock?
Yeah. You know, I really wish, and I personally think Tech is no longer with us, but how cool would it have been for Tech and Emery to meet? Because I feel like they're both on the same wavelength.
Yes.
Man, they could possibly create cures and who knows what else with their sciencey driven minds.
Yeah.
But yeah, that and their intellectual conversations would be out of this world.
And when you first said, you know, she is she a clone?
Yeah, yeah.
When you first, you said it more because of her Kiwi accent.
Yes, that's right.
I actually saw Tech in her.
Yeah.
I saw behind the eyes, behind those goggles, the way that she moved and talked, I saw Tech. And to me, that was why she was a clone.
Mm, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yours was more logical. And you know, I would love to see Emery and Nala Se have a conversation about Omega, because I want Emery to be curious and ask Nala Se questions like, why were you protecting her this entire time? Because obviously her blood had been drawn multiple times.
Yeah.
So I would love for them to have that conversation. Like, why does she mean so much to you? Because I feel a conversation like that would open Emery's eyes a bit more.
Yeah. What are you willing? Why are you risking your life?
Right.
To save her. She's a clone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I really hope we get that between them. Because I don't think we've seen them talking, at least outside of science. And then, you know, Crosshair, going to Crosshair here for a bit, he's not only confined physically in Mount Tantus, but he's also confined himself mentally because he believes that he deserves to be there. And at one point, Crosshair tells Omega, if I get the chance to escape, I wouldn't think twice about leaving you behind. But I think he was just saying that to push her away so that when she does get the opportunity to leave, she doesn't think, oh, I need to go save Crosshair.
Yes, and we've seen already that what he says is not necessarily what he really believes. Because he was willing to carry this other clone when he was almost dying.
Mm-hmm.
And he had, before that, said, if you're that weight, I will leave you behind.
Mm-hmm, it's
you
true. Know? Yeah. Oh, that's a great point. Yeah, maybe.
And then on top of that, not only he carried him, but then he killed for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically he killed for to somehow make sure that his death was not a waste. He is not something disposable that you can throw away.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so interesting, the whole loyalty aspect of this series, because I think there was at one point Crosshair tells Hunter, like way back in season one, you weren't loyal to me. And the clone cadets in this next episode, one of the clones tells Hunter, you guys are so loyal, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And then here you see you know, loyalty between Crosshair and Omega, even though Crosshair's not very open about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's so many like layers to look at and peel back the onion. And I was going to ask you, like, what did you think of the dynamic between Omega and Crosshair? Because I love how he comes across as the kind of parent who didn't want a dog.
Yeah.
But when the family gets a dog, he loves the dog more than anything in the world.
Yeah.
So that's Crosshair to me. So I was wondering what your take on the relationship was.
More than Crosshair, it's just one more example of Omega's way of thinking. It's not easy, but she will build a relationship. She will keep at it and she will keep coming and coming until it happens because that is the right thing. And it goes, again, it goes towards that, I don't know, skill, whatever you want to call it, that makes her so unique.
Mm. Yeah, I think she's just inherently aware. She's just aware of her surroundings, of what she needs to do in order to, like you said, build a relationship with him. When you want to be there for someone, even if they don't want you there, you still show up.
Yeah.
Even if for an hour, you guys even don't say anything.
Yeah,
at all.
Even if all you do is sit down.
Yeah.
That's it.
And it's just the fact of being there, it just shows what kind of person she is. And, you know, Omega created this little Lula doll made out of straw, not only because she obviously misses her Bad Batch family, but because it's her way to cope and find some, you know, semblance of comfort in the very, very empty, cold cell that she's in. And I like that Emery gave it back to her.
Yeah.
You know, she obviously did that because this doll means a lot to Omega. But when Emery did that, it made me wonder if she, as a kid, used to create personal items for herself, but then they got taken away from her. And I was wondering what you thought of Emery's act of kindness in that moment between them.
Well, to me, it was one more way in which we can see that Emery is trying to make that familiar connection.
Yes. Yeah.
She needs that connection. She's looking for that connection. To her, the easiest, fastest way to that connection is Omega.
Because she's clearly not getting anything with Dr. Hemlock.
No. So I'm hoping that is something that they show us. That light bulb going off or blowing up, whatever, whichever way you want to put it. But I want to see that moment.
Yeah, same. And Mommy, I cannot tell you how excited I was when we saw Roland Durand and his mother, Issa Durand, who is voiced by Angelica Houston, the mighty Angelica Houston. And I know everyone thinks of Morticia Adams, but I always, always loved her performance as the stepmother in Ever After, A Cinderella Story.
Yeah.
She was so cruel in that movie.
Oh, gosh.
So cruel. And she's so good at what she does.
Yeah.
And in the Lucasfilm Theater, I was sitting next to an author. Her name's S.T. Bende. She's done several original novels and Star Wars books. I love spending time with her. And so when I got to sit next to her, I thought, oh, yay, another person who loves Clone Wars, Rebels. And so when this part happened, we both geeked out. And I think we were the only two people who geeked out. Oh, it was so funny. I just think he's very, very hot. Sue me, okay? And it made me wonder how Ruby is doing. Because Omega is that kind of person who just makes friends with everyone and anything. And Ruby was one of those friends she made. And she also obviously had some sort of connection with Roland Durand because he had to convince his mother to help in finding information for Hunter and Wrecker. And so Issa told Hunter, your willingness to cross the pikes shows how desperate you are. And I'm really hoping this doesn't come and bite them in the butt, because the pikes, you don't want to mess with the pikes. But you can tell how Hunter is truly desperate, because desperation could have gotten them killed on this planet with the killer vines if it hadn't been for the clone cadets stepping in. So in our last episode that we recorded, we talked about how far Hunter might be willing to go.
Yeah.
But I was thinking of him having more of like a short fuse with anyone who got in his way. I didn't think about it in terms of him being reckless.
Yeah.
So do you think he was being reckless by not waiting for Rex and Echo?
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Yes. I think we did mention that the fact that he's going to go through a lot in order to find her. And the way that he said, and we're not stopping until we find her. It means that he's going to be put in situations and he's going to be willing to get himself into situations that are dangerous.
Yeah, for sure. And he obviously, he and Wrecker don't know that they have escaped from this planet.
And you called it. You said Omega's going to get herself out.
Oh, did I? I don't even remember saying that.
You have said that.
That's funny. But yeah, they don't know that they've escaped. So they're still trying to do everything and anything possible to find Omega and Crosshair, I imagine, but mostly Omega. Yeah, and I'm just curious how much more is going to be chipped away from Hunter. Because he's not wearing, I don't know if you noticed, but that bandana he normally wears with the skull on it, he's not wearing that. It's like this dark red bandana now. Not sure what happened to his original bandana, but it looks like they've gone through a few things.
Yeah. Because
their armor was all worn.
It dirty.
Hasn't been maintained. They probably only eat one meal a day. They haven't probably showered in who knows how long.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's spiraling, I would say.
But I'm actually hoping that is now that Crosshair and Omega are out, that it's really not going to take them the whole freaking season.
I hope not. No, I don't think so.
To find each other. Because if you can make, you know, have transmissions for other things, you can certainly transmit, hey, I'm okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I got you.
Go on.
No, I imagine the reunion will happen sooner rather than later. I think the bulk of the season is going to be stopping Hemlock from getting Omega again, rescuing the other clones, and trying to thwart whatever plans Palpatine has. Because we obviously know from The Rise of Skywalker that whatever Project Necromancer was supposed to be never really gets to the point that he wanted it to be at that stage.
Yeah, and which is one of the things that I was thinking as Hemlock was saying, we will find her. I'm like, does she grow up to at least, you know, I'm not saying an old age, but you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's so true because she is the key. So yeah. I don't know. I don't know whether the ultimate end would be eliminating Hemlock or they better not kill off Omega. They better not. I will have words. strong words. But let's not focus on that. We're not there yet. Let's see. So Hunter and Wrecker, now having met these boys, are going to take them to Pabu. But we know from the trailer that the Empire arrives on Pabu. So, like, there's a moment where you see the tree in the background and the Archeum, and I'm like, no, I don't want them to destroy this place. And it breaks my heart to think these boys are ending this episode thinking they're going to get to choose
their
own lives.
And then,
but that might not happen. It just sucks. And yet, because Mox at the end says, we're cadets without an army. I don't know where we fit anymore. And Hunter tells him, you have time to figure it out. Make your own path. Be something other than a soldier. And I like how the title of the episode, Paths Unknown, refers to them because they don't know what their paths will be now, especially if the Empire, when the Empire arrives on Pabu. the only thing they know is that it's their path to figure out. It's not the Empire or the Republic telling them that they're going to be soldiers. So I'm hoping they'll still get that chance. Come on, Star Wars, give me something. Man.
You know you're not going to get it. It is Star Wars.
No. You know, and they kind of remind me of like little tiny versions of Rex, Wolf, and Gregor.
Gregor, yeah.
Because one of the things that Gregor, I believe, says in Rebels is, or Rex, I don't remember who, something to the effect of we're choosing to fight because, you know, they didn't have the option before. So now they're free men who are able to make these choices.
So, and you know what? Maybe they won't become soldiers of the Empire, but they will choose to be soldiers for
a better cause.
For a better cause.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They certainly have the knowledge of what they've learned so far as cadets. Did you have any other things to say about the three clones? I like how one of them was voiced by Daniel Logan. I was worried. I was like, oh no, where's Daniel?
I just love how they stuck to each other, you know,
yes.
Like, and they even say it. The other clones left them, mm-hmm. you know, but mm-hmm. they stuck to each other. They did the brother thing, you know. These are my brothers. I'm going to help my brothers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, when you mentioned, noted back how Hemlock said I was going to have plans for Crosshair since the reconditioning wasn't working, which makes me mad because we know that these clones that are killing their brothers is because they're being reconditioned.
Yeah, it breaks my heart. I know I keep saying that, but it's true. It breaks my heart because even way back in the Clone Wars series, when Slick had been selling information to Ventress, I believe the reason he did that, if I remember correctly, is because he didn't want his brothers to keep dying in a war where they were bred to be soldiers. He thought they were slaves. Even then, you have clones who are mindful and aware that they're all brothers in this. And so the fact that Palpatine had these chips implanted into their heads and warped their mental states and had them betray each other and still has them betraying each other.
Yeah, like it's...
Because you know for a fact that the clones would actually not do this.
This, yes.
Oh, man. But yeah, it's just a tragedy. Tragedy with a capital T. So we know Project Necromancer is taking place here, as we referenced earlier, and it's related to Palpatine's desire to keep living. And part of me wonders if Mount Tantus is a Sith temple because of all the red lines and markings. And I'm like, oh, this looks like Malachor.
Yeah.
This looks like the Jedi temple on Lothal. And so, yeah, it would be interesting if Tantus used to be a Sith temple that was repurposed into a science facility. And Hemlock at one point says, the specimens are well guarded to ensure they remain viable for testing. And he's confident that they will have a successful M-count replication. And I just have to keep harping on this. But who are these specimens? because if they were him, I feel like if they were Snoke or even Palpatine, we would have seen it. But there's this air of mystery around the fact that they didn't show us what's inside those containers.
Well, I think they're Jedi.
Yeah,
that
for
they
sure.
Have
they
captured.
Have to.
They're Jedi. They have captured.
And going back to what you said in our last episode, maybe Asajj
Ventress.
Who
that's
the heck
maybe
knows?
That's how. That's how they managed to bring her from being dead in one novel to now being alive.
Yeah, who knows who. No, I mean the creators.
Because if her body was taken and preserved, they're cloning. It's not just about the midichlorian count being able to sustain It's also about creating the body
the perfect clone that could inhabit Palpatine's consciousness as well as Palpatine's force abilities.
So we have a clone Ventress.
Yeah, mate. Oh my God. You know, I had told this to my mom. It's like we're on the same wavelength because I had told this to my friend yesterday and I was like, oh my God, what if Ventress is a clone? And she's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And the reason I had told her is because at one point I come up with very crazy fan fiction ideas. At one point, like when I was depressed about Ezra not being in Star Wars Rebels because I was just like, where is he? I came up with an idea of like, oh man, what if Ezra actually died, but there was a clone of Ezra? Would he have the memories of the original Ezra? And it was supposed to be like a romance story with Sabine. It's, you know, it's whatever at this point, okay? But yeah, I came up with these very crazy things. And I'm like, oh man, what if Ventress is a clone? So yeah, mommy, it could be. It could be.
That would tie perfectly with the whole story.
I mean, but yeah. So as they discover, Omega sample supports a positive M count transfer with no degradation from the specimen. And a lot of people are like, so this means Omega is force sensitive. And I'm like, no, that's not what they're saying. What they're saying is that her genetic structure, her genetic makeup, makes it possible to artificially transfer midichlorians without midichlorians degrading after the transfer. So there's something about the way she's built genetically that they want to replicate for Palpatine, because that's essentially what Palpatine wants.
And that brings us to prior series when they were in Kamino and Nala Se kept talking with the Prime Minister, because she's unique in the sense that, and I believe it was the minister who wanted to have her dissected.
Yes, he said discard her afterwards, something to that effect.
Because she holds
the key.
A key to making better clones.
Yes, yeah.
Not only she was being targeted then, the poor thing is being targeted now.
Yes, yeah. And yeah, so that's what Palpatine wants. He wants to transfer not just his consciousness, but his connection to the Force from one clone body to the other clone body. But the only clone with the genetic structure that works for this kind of transfer is Omega. So she is what they need to help duplicate and replicate. And if they capture her, I'm sure she's going to be subject to rigorous, inhumane tests and experiments to determine what about her genetics works. And she will not survive that sort of process. And so, yeah, I think that's what it is. But there is the possibility of making a Force-sensitive Omega.
If her blood can handle
the transfer and it doesn't degrade.
And it doesn't degrade, then administration of midichlorians into Omega can basically make her force sensitive.
Yeah. So this goes back again to my crazy fan fiction ideas. So in 2021, and I have evidence because I had written it to my friend. If anyone wishes, I can send you the DMs. When I was unemployed and losing my senses, I came up with this fanfic idea of Sabine suffering some kind of wound. And she needed a blood transfusion. And in that story, you know, I imagined that Ezra was a match and he willingly gave her whatever she needed. Basically, I wanted Sabine to have force abilities, which, hey, ended up happening anyway. So I thought, okay, well, if Ezra gives her his midichlorian-rich blood, then that means that she would develop force abilities. But it turns out I was wrong, because according to Wikipedia, an organism that had been grievously injured and unable to be kept alive through medical treatment could be infused with blood rich in midichlorians, forcing an organism to stay alive when it would normally die, as was the case with General Grievous. However, this would not transfer any of the blood donor's force sensitivity. So I was like, ah, man. But it's crazy to me how I was thinking about midichlorian blood transfusions in 2021. And that's exactly why Omega is so important to the Emperor, because she would theoretically be able to retain the midichlorians transferred to her. So her blood, her genetic structure, if replicated properly, would be able to artificially receive and keep Force-sensitive abilities. So I had the answer 3 years ago. Thank you. I would like my paycheck in the mail. but yeah, isn't that wild?
Yeah.
I know.
And you, John, are thinking of all that science.
I know. I really was. Yeah. I'm like, I can't do any of this. But it's Star Wars science. Anyway. So
the magic bread.
The what? The magic bread from the Star Wars sequels? That always fascinates me, that little bread. So now that Omega is gone, do you think Emery will miss her? Because, you know, they've been hanging out for 125 plus days.
Yeah.
And I think she will.
Yes, she will, because that was her whole thing from the beginning. She wants that connection.
And I also find it interesting that Emery doesn't have the whole picture when it comes to the Emperor's plans, because Hemlock told her they would be receiving a special guest. He didn't name who it was. And when Omega asked why there were so many troopers, Emery didn't know. She said, the doctor will inform me if it's necessary. So I think Emery's going to be shocked and horrified, possibly horrified, when she finally learns the truth and what that could potentially mean for Omega. And the fact that she's being kept under the dark,
it could be part of that.
Yeah.
I think that when Hemlock pointed out to Hunter's fatherly
emotions. Yes.
I don't think he did it because he didn't realize clones were capable of doing that. I think he knows exactly what clones are capable of.
Oh, yeah. He just meant to jab him with it. Yeah,
exactly. So he knows Emery, and he knows what she's capable of in terms of connection, emotional connection. And I think that that's the reason he purposely keeps her at bay, because he doesn't want her to develop any connections. He wants to keep her in that state of drone type personality.
At a distance, yeah.
Where I just do what I'm told and that's it. Mm-hmm, no connections whatsoever. Therefore, there's no questioning. Mm-hmm. When you start to connect, you start to question.
Yes.
Which is what she has been doing. And he has stifled her in the moment.
You know, and it's interesting thinking back to Omega and Batcher and how Batcher was going to be... was slated for extermination because she was domesticated and a liability.
Yeah.
What's happening with Emery and Omega is also making Emery a liability. Definitely.
Yeah.
And yeah. Oh, man. I can't wait to see how this stuff unfolds.
Yeah.
And whether it's going to make me scream at the television. And I know it's too early to say because we're only 3 episodes in, but I think what's going to get Hemlock in the end is one of his experiments. Because I get that feeling that his experiments are going to be his undoing.
I don't know. I wish it could be...
Hunter?
No. I would love Emery or Nala Se.
Nala Se, yes.
You know, yeah, because he is so twisted with Nala Se. He the way he twists things, like the knife, he just pulls it.
Yeah.
And for a person in Nala Se's position to have that opportunity, so I would wish it would be either Nala Se, and if not Nala Se, then Emery.
Yeah. And the reason why... that came to me and why your theories also work is because he said to Omega, actions have consequences, sometimes not in the ways we imagine. And he has done a lot of things that have consequences. And it's going to come for him.
Yes.
And not in the way that he imagines. So yeah, either whether it's by experiment, by Emery, or by Nala Se, I hope it's sweet, sweet justice. and then some other note.
Why is it that it's so satisfying when a character like Hemlock gets his comeuppance?
Because it's like you, the guy is just... like, I don't even know how to explain it. They're evil. They're bad. They're a threat to everything that's good.
And you know the funny thing about it all?
What?
I've never felt like that towards the Emperor.
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially with Fives.
I felt anger.
You know why? It's because I knew that he dies at the time. You know, Vader had thrown him off.
That could be.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about it. Like, why is it that I haven't felt the way that I feel about Hamble?
Yeah, because we already know, and the Emperor's and Vader had thrown him.
He gets it.
And then Rey, you know, was the one who eventually disintegrated him. So yeah, That's why we don't really feel actively like that, because we know he gets his comeuppance. But with Hemlock, we don't know. We don't know what his future. And he's all about, oh, this is going to cement my position in the science academy or whatever it was. And I'm like, no, that's not your future, my man. But anyway, other notes. When Omega said Tech had her memorize all the plans. And then Crosshair softly says, of course he did. It gave me the impression that Omega told him what happened with Tech. Because it wasn't a sarcastic, of course he did. It was more of like, yeah, that sounds like something Tech would have done.
At the moment he said that, I that was one of the things that I thought about it immediately. Like, does he know?
Yeah, I think he does. I think Omega would not have kept that from him. To find out on his own later on, she would have told him that this is what happened.
But then this is the thing. If Omega told him, why is he being such a dumb butt? Like, you know, the way he speaks and says, leave me, like, come on, your brother sacrificed his life.
And he probably takes the blame for that too. I mean, all the things that he did that put them in that position, he probably takes part of the blame. And then he said it to Omega, I deserve to be here.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, man.
Yeah. And he doesn't think he brings any worth. So if Tech sacrificed himself to save Omega, Omega's better off without him, without Crosshair, because Crosshair is just going to ruin it. And his sacrifice would have been in vain. So that's why he thinks he should just continue to stay out of the picture. But Omega's like, none of us belong here. I wonder how Crosshair's hand is going to affect him moving forward. Like, I if something crucial is happening and he fails to deliver, that's potentially another burden he'll have to carry.
It may be that he cannot recover, but he doesn't necessarily going to get worse. Or it may be that by being away from the experimentation and all that blood taking, his body starts to heal.
Right.
And he starts to get the feeling of himself again.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I can see that. And so at one point, Hemlock says, the exotic matter facilities have expanded, providing alteration and testing of much larger assets. And I'm thinking, you know, he's referring to the Zillow Beast that we saw last season, because that was a huge thing that they would need a huge facility for. And the Emperor said, I have need of such grand designs. And I'm so curious how and when we're going to see these little threads manifest in the future.
Yeah.
Because why does he need all these exotic things? Those vines.
Yeah.
The Sarlacc pit that was like on steroids. All these things. Like, why weaponize all these things? What?
Well, it's
I mean, I know it's to subjugate people, but
yeah, it's a way of making people want him,
I guess.
So, you know, if things threaten us and somebody comes and rescues us, we love that person because they rescue us.
Oh, I see.
So he likes to be the hero.
Oh. Oh, yeah, I can see that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so the assassin clone, like, I have to make sure that I touch on this. So the assassin clone that we see for, like, 5 seconds, I know a lot of people think that's Tech. Personally, I hope it's not, because that would mean that Tech is suffering, like Echo was suffering when he was being held captive by the Separatists. But in my opinion, Saw's line about sacrifices have to be made, plus Omega and Tech's conversation about change and how that's a fundamental part of life and how we have to keep moving on, plus the kind of finality behind some of the sentiments shared in the interviews by the creators and even Dee Bradley Baker, they're telling me that Tech is no longer physically with us anymore. But that's just me. I mean, you're welcome to think if Tech is alive or not. That's just my opinion. That said, if Tech is somehow alive, I still see someone dying, and that someone could be Hunter. And I would hate that. And I told my best friend that it could be something like, remember Armageddon? When Ben Affleck drew the short straw and he had to blow up the asteroid, and then Bruce Willis trades places with him. Mm-hmm. I think Hunter could be the Bruce Willis of the Bad Batch.
He certainly has the physique.
Oh, yes. But yeah, I somehow see someone still dying. I feel like this is Omega's last lesson, sort of like Ezra.
Again, you bring me into these things, knowing full well what they're gonna be doing to me in the end. And it's like you sit there and you enjoy it.
I know I'm not enjoying it. I'm not.
You enjoying the pain that I
no,
suffer.
I'm not enjoying it right now.
No.
No.
No. No. That smile in your face doesn't say.
I mean, I laugh for anything, really. And I laugh at very awkward things that I shouldn't be laughing at. And that's just me as a person. It's something I try not to do, but it's just, that's how I deal with life. I laugh at things when I'm not supposed to be laughing. But yeah, I have no idea, really. I don't know whether Tech's alive. Personally, I don't think he is, but if he is, I can still see something else happening. But if they all live and that happy ending that some people have been referring to happens, I'm all for it. So one last thing, Omega kicking the Mastroid.
That was so cool.
That was fantastic. Fantastic.
It's like, no, you're not coming in here.
Oh, and one more thing. I think it's safe to say that bounty hunters are going to be coming after Omega now, because we saw Fennec Shand.
Yeah.
We saw Cad Bane. And Asajj Ventress was in the trailer. Like, let's not forget.
The clone.
Yeah, we don't know if she's a clone or not. But let's not forget that Asajj was a bounty hunter in the Clone Wars. And so she could be coming after Omega as well. So regardless, crazy stuff is about to hit the fan. And I was wondering if you're excited about that, Mommy.
Yes. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Because that's the stuff that I like about these shows. Mm. The constant moving here, there, and fighting, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's it for today's episode. Did you have any other thoughts to share about the first three premiere episodes?
The storyline picked up very nicely and moved on, and how they made time pass without really making us go through it was very nicely done.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we know time has passed.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like we didn't lose any time between, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was very good. And I wouldn't even know what else to say.
I mean, I am happy that Batcher ended up...
Yeah, Batcher comes out and helps them.
Yeah.
And the way she... Ooh, Batcher, you came back. And then how she...
Does the whistle
thing and calls him back and takes her with her.
Yeah. Like, and I know some people have pointed out that Hunter has done that whistle thing with his teeth and his fingers, which I have never learned how to do. My aunt knows how to do it.
I have no idea
it's
how
like
that's
magic.
Done. Yeah.
I've tried and it's just spit that comes out.
I love in that end scene. I just love how well they work together.
Yes.
Omega and Crosshair.
Yeah.
How they help each other, and just the way she went up, knocked out the clone trooper or whatever. Came down while he went up.
Yeah.
And she kept shooting like a professional.
Yeah, I need to have like a list of all their plans, like what each plan entails, because this was a really cool plan.
Yeah,
it was just really well done. I loved it, and Omega was like on point.
Yeah.
I was so proud of her.
Yeah, it was very nice, that synchronization between the two of them, even though they haven't really worked together.
Yeah, exactly. And it just goes to show that whatever plans it was that they've created in the past, that Omega learned well from Tech and from Hunter and from Wrecker.
In a way, it's the way Tech still lives on.
Yes, it's true. It's true.
I really love the way that when Emerit realizes that Omega's blood is the key, she runs down and she says, stop.
Yes.
And
yes.
Hemlock is like, what? You know, like,
yes,
ready to dismiss her.
Yes, yes.
And she shows him what it is that she discovered, and he goes, stop.
Yeah. Yeah,
Let them go.
And I remember when you were first watching the episodes and the blood sample started blinking, you said something like, okay, so now I'm curious what you're going to do to Emery.
Yeah.
To Emery, you were saying, I'm curious what you're going to do now. One option would have been, I know what this means for Omega, or have a vague idea what this means for Omega. I could destroy it because she means something to me. Or I can tell Hemlock because I want to be, like, seeking his approval.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if that's what also prompted her to show him the results, seeking his approval. Or maybe she knew that Hemlock would go to the lengths that he would go to destroy her, and she used the blood as a way to buy Omega time.
That too.
So I don't really know.
Yeah, it's one of those situations that is very difficult to analyze because you don't know. It's always the what if.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes, they got shot. What if it that shot they could have still be able to get away?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What if that shot meant like they were going to be destroyed?
Mm-hmm.
In that case, then Emery coming and stopping them saved her and gave her time. But what if they were still would have been able to get away and escape? Then you could argue that Emery came and did that because she is doing the right thing that Hemlock wants her to do, seeking his approval.
Mm-hmm,
you
know? Yeah.
So it's one of those situations where, like, you don't know for real what does it mean.
I'm leaning more towards her seeking Hemlock's approval, just because I feel like her whole relationship with Omega is not going to come to fruition fully until she really learns the truth
about Hemlock.
About Hemlock, about Project Necromancer, about what they want Omega for.
Because
she just has a vague idea. She says there are various tests taking place, but I don't think she knows the specifics behind this one major project that's happening. And I think once she learns that, that's when we will really find out where her allegiance lies.
Yeah. So we'll see.
We will see. the fact that the ship isn't in good condition when Omega and Crosshair escape and go into hyperspace. So in the trailer, we know that at one point the ship crash lands, but we don't know what planet it is that they're crash landing on. And if you pause the trailer, you see like two people coming out of the cockpit. And, you know, now we know that's Crosshair and Omega. So yeah, what's going to happen here? And in the other parts of the trailer, we see Crosshair in the corner. And so we knew at the time that Crosshair would come back to the team, but we didn't see any other evidence of Omega. So obviously they were hiding the fact
that they were trying to not mislead us, but keep us in the dark, like questioning, what does this mean? What does that mean? So, could this be that?
I know for me, it was, so Crosshair is back, but Omega's not back, so they did not get her. Did Crosshair somehow escape, or did they both escape and somehow Omega got taken again? So yeah, so now I'm like, okay, so maybe because of that way that shot was cropped, it means that Omega's actually next to Crosshair, and then they just had to crop it out to not give it all away. So yeah, I'm curious what's going to happen next now, you know, after they crash landed.
Yeah, well, like I said, I just hope that we do not get too many episodes of them missing each other.
Oh, yeah.
I need them to be together. I need this group to be together. Yeah. They have lost too much.
Yes. No, I think, like I said, it's going to happen sooner rather than later. And I think, you know, it's great to know that Fee is going to take part in it as well. I think what's going to come after Omega and Crosshair reuniting with Hunter and Wrecker is that they're going to start contributing more to what Rex and Echo are doing.
Yep.
I think that's the logical way this is going.
We'll see.
We will see.
Can't wait for the next.
Mm-hmm. Same. So in our next episode, we'll be discussing a different approach.
Until next time, may the Force be with you.
Always.
God, give it!